My name's Jen Yuchin.
And I'm Ari Fox.
And we're New Gaming News, a bi-weekly podcast and newsletter focused on the esports and gambling industry.
I think we should start with the betting happening in New Jersey, and then we can go to these, like, League of Legends Worlds partnerships, because that's just, like, extra fluff stuff to beef it up. But I think there's a lot to say. So
there's definitely a lot to say in that spectrum, because, you know, it's, like, come to a lot of the end of a lot of seasons, like Overwatch and League of Legends and stuff like that. So there's not a whole lot going on in esports at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But, I've seen that's a big thing. I think it's sort of pushing the envelope.
What's a big thing?
That there was betting in Borgata. You know, that they had, yes. the first bet was placed on the League of Legends championship, which I, you know, there's the reason I think, and I've been told this many times, is the reason why there's such interest in the world of betting on esports is because esports is happening all the time, all over the place, on a professional level. So if you wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning and you want to make a bet on something, and you're in the United States, you can find an esports tournament that's happening somewhere in the world that's live and that's actual professional.
Yeah,
it's unlike any other way you can bet on anything else of conventional sports. So like if it's the NFL, you have to wait till Sunday or Thursday night or Monday night. If it's baseball, you know, they're not happening all the time. You have to wait till like the evening or if there happened to be a day game. So it's sporadically in and out here and there. So it's a very different type of, it's an opportunity, I think, for bookies to really, once they get their teeth in more into the esports world, it's the opportunity to make a lot more money because there's a lot more bets that can happen on a lot more different games. So it's definitely a big, big win for, the gambling industry and the bookies to make a lot more money on these things. Because there's just a lot more going on. So much more activity. And it's also international. So, you know, in my opinion, this is just the tip of the iceberg. Very, very tip of the iceberg.
Well, that's what they reference as well. They say even with countries largely cutting down on gambling and betting, esports continues to grow as more and more sponsors are attracted to it. It accurately seems that esports has a gorgeous future ahead of itself with the concept of expanding to different regions. And they did put some regulations on it, I guess. They put a limit of $1,000, obviously American, in bets on the match and have strict prohibition of in-game offerings.
Right. Well, I think it's something that's being closely watched by both the gambling industry and the esports industry. But I got to tell you, from my perspective, the publishers are not ready to make that move yet.
Mm.
I mean, they won't even appear to speak at my conference about the casino esports conference about any of this. They want nothing to do with gambling at all. So, you know, it's happening around them.
Well, somebody who's kind of on the inside of it, do you know, like, why they allowed that to happen this past weekend in New Jersey? And do you know if the publisher was at all involved in it?
Well, the publisher doesn't, was that Riot for League? It's League of Riot, right? I know that Riot is a little bit more progressive on the betting.
Mm.
I would say the number one people that are super progressive is Take-Two Media. Because Jay Moses came and spoke at the event in September. So that's an obvious, like, move by Take-Two to say, you know, we're not against it, but we're also not, like, you know, we're going to let you speak, Jay. You go ahead. You can speak on your stuff. And, you know, when I did the moderating of the keynote with Jay Moses and Fatality, those questions were actually vetted and reviewed by their general counsel.
They were.
So if there was anything that was going to be offered on betting, it wasn't specifically about Take-Two or about GTA or GTA's virtual casino. or any of that. It had nothing to do with that. It was all about, like, I was just basically leading Jay into talking about sports betting as, I mean, esports betting as a whole, and how it will grow. So it had nothing, it, he didn't, I wasn't, I was actually told not to ask him questions about the virtual casino in GTA or about, you know, anything with the NBA 2K and how, you know, since there's betting on professional sport, although I did, we did generalize, I mean, I did ask him questions that were general. So it was all about, like, you know, there's betting on professional NBA games, so would that lead to, you know, betting on professional esports? And, you know, and then, of course, he answered the questions. But they were all, you know, pretty much prompted, and they were reviewed. So I wouldn't have any problem with doing that with any other publisher if they wanted to see the questions the moderator was going to ask. And I've even written to some publishers and said, listen, if there's a question you don't like, you don't have to answer it. Or if there's, you know, or you know, you can review. I've even written them in emails. I said, I'll send you all of the topics, and I'll send you the questions that will be asked by the moderator. You can have them reviewed by your general counsel, and so. But it's not even that. They don't even want to appear.
Yeah, I was going to say, what is their response to that?
Their response is that they want nothing to do with gambling. And they can't, their general counsel and public PR people are like, they don't even want someone. Riot might be the next card to fall, and that might be the next publisher. But like a company like EA, like Epic, no way in hell are we gonna ever see. Not in the next 2 to 3 years will ever see Tim Sweeney, the CEO of Epic, or anybody, you know, coming in coming to the CEC. Not anytime soon.
That does make sense to me because I feel like they are a little bit more general of a brand. And a little bit more family friendly.
Yeah, he actually wrote me back in an email because I wrote Tim Sweeney, and I sent him that email that described that we, you know, you could review all the questions. He wrote me back and he said, "Stop emailing me. I want nothing to do with gambling. We have nothing to do with gambling in Epic." So, I mean, it's fine, you know, for that, you know, and I'm okay with it, you know. And I said to him, I wrote him back and I said, "Thanks very much for getting back to me." It's like, you know, I understand, because, yeah, I mean, I take the same position that you do. However, you know, when we do see, it's not gonna stop offshore betting on Fortnite, professional Fortnite tournaments in the future. So in the next 2 to 3 years, even if Epic isn't coming to a gambling conference or involved in it or talking about it, there will be betting going on offshore in the dark. In the dark depths of, you know, places like in Malta and, you know, these offshore betting places, they're taking bets on 15-year-olds and 6-year-olds playing Fortnite. It's just, that happens, you know. The governments can't, you know, watch everything. And it does happen, and it's going to happen. I don't think that's anyone's going to stop it. But, you know, we were talking also about... I think there was another article about the betting loot boxes. CSGO has been one of the big, you know, one of the big games that have been really taking on, because it's got an older crowd and older audience, but it's one of the games that I think is going to be one of the first that, like, everyone sees. Now, the bet that was taken in Borgata was a League of Legends bet.
Yes.
But I don't see that one... I think CSGO is going to be the next one that's really going to hit the... I mean, in Europe already it's big. So people are already betting on CSGO. And then there was another one. Was it StarCraft?
Dota 2, maybe?
Oh, was it Dota? Yeah, it was Dota. So Dota was another one. But, you know, it's really interesting what's going on with all of this from the Chinese perspective and what they did in regulating play.
What do you mean by that, just for the audience?
Well, what I mean by that is that the government of China has regulated people's play on video games. Like, they've only allowed them a certain amount of hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's minors, and I think they have to be done by 10 p.m. They can only spend, like, $20-something a month on in-game purchases as well.
Right, but there's an interesting psychological read on that, and that is that is, or at least does China believe, that the same endorphin that is released when you're trying to beat the game, is that the same rush that you feel when you're trying to, you know, win money?
I'm going to say yeah, because it's that competitive nature. Like, even, let's say your kid wants to play a baseball game at 11 o'clock at night, they're going to be, their endorphins are going to be higher, they're going to be more amped. It's just an energy spike within them because of the competitive nature.
Right. But also, it's, you know, when you're playing a video game and you don't get very far, you want to keep going because yes. You want to keep seeing what's next. I mean, even in non-competitive video games like Skyrim or something, or
I think that boils down to escapism, but I do understand.
It's total escapism. Yeah. There's escapism in there. There's the challenge, and if it's competitive, then there's a challenge of winning. But overall, let's throw an umbrella over everything. It is escapism. Let's not, you know, beat around the bush there.
Yeah.
But when you're sitting at a slot machine in a casino, or you're playing, you know, a game in a casino, that's also escapism.
Mm.
It's the same in many ways. And I think that the government of China is like, you know, it's almost in a way like, you know, it's a communist country, so they feel like they may lose control over these younger people if they, you know, I mean, maybe that's what they're saying. I have no idea. Like, why would they restrict their people in playing? But,
I think,
you know,
it's because they just restrict everything there.
Well, that, you know, China was the biggest leader in video gaming and esports up until like 3 months ago before they initiated this. Now the United States is going to be the leader in all of this. But it's an interesting, you know, thing of what they're trying to do. But I can understand the government. And that's the thing that I think that, like, what I try to tell publishers in this country is that eventually, if you're not going to regulate, you know, certain things, and we've talked in the past about sectionalizing the game, you know, one's for professional players, one is for the general public, for people 18 and younger, and then there's the 18 and older crowd where you can let betting go, where you can have peer-to-peer play and that kind of thing online, and that it's sanctioned by the publisher. Because if their publisher is not going to organize themselves like that, then I think that the government, even the U.S. government, will step in and do it for them. And I don't think they want that. I don't think anybody wants that. But that is, you know, and I've told, and I've spoken to, I was at, you know, I talk about this a lot. I was in Washington, D.C. at the consumer protection talk that they had for the day. It was a seminar about whether or not esports or video gaming is gambling. And they've been dancing around that card for a very long time. So, you know, with all the things with loot boxes and skins and all that stuff, it's all based on whether it's gambling or not. But, I mean, if you throw an umbrella over it and you say it's escapism, yeah, it's escapism, just like, and you can get a rush from it. You can get a high from it. So it has the same ways, but I don't think it's been identified as an addictive behavior yet. I mean, some...
Playing video games, it has.
Yeah, okay, so some, it has. But then gambling is also an addictive behavior.
Yes.
But these are all vices of, you know, what people like to do as fun. And what I'm saying is that if those voices get louder, the government will step in and they will regulate what the publishers are doing. And I think that creates a big problem in the industry. But we're not there yet. I don't think because of esports, I don't know if we'll ever get there, because now they've placed, you know, now colleges are so big in esports now. We have an actual speaker coming from the Atlantic Coast Collegiate Conference, who's going to be coming to, he's the CEO, he's going to be coming to the CEC in June, and we're having a couple talks on collegiate esports. So it's just going to become part of our culture. But, you know, that's the other thing about gambling. Gambling has also become part of the American culture.
I agree.
It's not something I think that the publishers should look at as, you know, this taboo thing. But I definitely think they should sectionalize it.
Yeah, I think the stigma needs to be lifted off of it.
Yeah, but you know what? well, you know, I think eventually they're going to face that music. But I think there was a, we were talking, there was another article that we had that was about sponsorships, and, you know, was it Louis Vuitton?
It was Louis Vuitton. Well, there's a few on that list, but that was the last one.
Right, but you know, it's interesting what's happening is that, you know, what legitimizes it, and a lot of people said this about the betting that happened in Borgata, was it legitimizes and mainstreams esports. But the thing about it is that that's not necessarily, you know, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I think it's a good thing, because I think it's just saying, you know, it's here to stay.
I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing, because it's saying it's here to stay. We're not going to, it's not going anywhere. It's just going to keep building. And I think that's a great way to, you know, to legitimize the sport. And to, instead of running away from it and trying to limit it and regulate it like the Chinese government has been doing, I think we're mainstreaming it, and then we're going to regulate it. So what, but as it becomes more mainstream, it's becoming more regulated. Mm-hmm. So you asked the question earlier, is like, why did New Jersey have a betting on League of Legends at the Borgata? There's a few reasons. One, because ever since the repeal of PASPA, which was allowed professional betting and wagering on conventional sports, I think that New Jersey wants to be ahead of the curve. Look what's happening on the sports betting side with New Jersey.
Yeah.
They are basically beating every single state in the country, even Las Vegas, even Nevada, for the number one state that is making the most amount of money on sports betting.
Mm.
And, you know, it goes to because they're the first, you know, were they the first to have sports betting? No, obviously Nevada was. So was Montana, and so was Delaware. Actually, those were three states. People don't realize that, but there were three states that were able to take sports betting, but they didn't capitalize it the same way.
It was like that was in 2016?
Yeah. But, yeah, that was 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago, that the law was repealed by the Supreme Court of the United States. But what we're talking about in this instance is when you're first to market, but they're not first to market. That's the funny part about it. It's almost like they took something that was already being done in these three states. There was so much hoopla about it. It was repealed in the Supreme Court. It was allowed in the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court ruled, but there was a lot of news about it. It was like New Jersey was like, it was like the Jersey Shore. Like, everybody in the United States knows about the Jersey Shore. You know, we're very loud in this state. People, like, make a lot of noise. And I think what happened was it was a good move on Chris Christie's part to push and push and push and push. You know, I had been following it the whole time to get the sports betting repealed.
Okay.
You know, to allow sports betting to happen in New Jersey. You know, I had been following this because, as you know, I have the background in the casino industry.
Yes.
And so I'd been following the whole news story before the Supreme Court ruled that, you know, that it was illegal to not allow the states to have sports betting. I'd been following it, and when it reached the appellate courts, there was a big decision on whether or not the state of New Jersey should move forward and continue, because it meant a lot of tax dollar money that that would have been the taxpayers would have to pay a lot of money to continue the fight to the Supreme Court. Well, they took a vote. It was an actual vote. When you go into the polls to vote for your local representatives, there was a question in the ballot that said, do you think that New Jersey should have legal sports betting? And it passed. So the tax payers pushed it forward,
yeah.
And they went with it. And, you know, so that's what happened. And then New Jersey got the Supreme Court to change its mind and say, yeah, New Jersey should have sports betting. And then that sort of opened up a whole Pandora's box of new things. Now they created in-game betting, which is like a whole new thing that you can bet during a game and all these other things, which is very applicable to esports. Because in esports, you know, you can see the players playing, and there's certain software that puts an overlay over, and you can see the percentages changing, you know, very quickly, because in esports it's a lot faster moving than anything else, and that's how you can gauge your bets. So, but I think the biggest problem now is people don't know how to bet on the games. Now, I think, you know, and the other part about it is the reason why they did take the bet in Borgata, but they're not doing, I think, in my personal opinion, they're not doing it right. If they want to do it right, they should have a viewing party. So you have a League of Legends viewing party, or an Overwatch viewing party.
Yeah, how did everybody get notified that this was the opportunity? Did you just have to be in the area at the time? Did they promote it?
No, there was never any promotion. There was just, the only thing was, like, there was nobody there, and they're like, oh, let's take the first bet on esports, because New Jersey never said you couldn't bet on esports. I spoke to David Robeck, who is the head of the Division of Gaming Enforcement for New Jersey, and they never said you couldn't bet on esports. What it was that they said nobody was interested.
Well, it says that they only made the offering available for the weekend, per the DGE's permission.
Exactly. It was a test. They were testing it, and they only got... There was only, like, one person, I think, that bet $100. So they were just sort of testing the waters, but it was monumental historically, because it was the first of many, 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 many wagerings and bets that are going to happen, you know, in the next 2 to 3 years. So we're looking at just the small little smackerelling of what might be for the future. So, for example, when I have another GamerCon conference, we will have a section that's 18 or older, and have some viewing parties if there's a professional tournament going on at the time, which there should be somewhere around the world.
Yeah.
And we'll have viewing parties, and we'll have professional peer-to-peer play for money. So there's going to be a lot more meat when it comes to it, and we'll be announcing dates for GamerCon in 2020 soon, but it's definitely going to have a lot more gambling or gamblification to it than it has in the past, which I think will be interesting for older people. But it'll also still have all the fun stuff for young people to have, and, you know, go play the indie games and VR and cosplay, and we have music. We have a couple bands that have already emailed us, and they're like, when's the next game come? We want to come play. Like, The Tram wants to come, and it's a local band. We got another one today about some other band that's played that wants to come back. But really a lot of fun. You know, you've been to GamerCons, and they're a lot of fun.
Yeah, so it was a great time.
Yeah, so we're really planning on the next one to be just really, really cool. So we did talk more about, I wanted to get back to, you know, how it's mainstreaming it, and then how it's like, because of the mainstreaming, we're getting these sponsors like Louis Vuitton and stuff like that that are getting involved as well. And it's interesting to note that all of this sponsor stuff at the top is at the highest levels is really creating the super mainstream of esports. But then, you know, we talked about recently about how Mark Cuban keeps doubting that there's no money. And honestly, I could still agree with him.
He did talk specifically about owning an esports team. He said that that was bad business. But I think sponsoring an esports event, especially in the creative ways on this one list for the League of Legends Worlds, I think that there is money in that.
Yeah, I think that actually...
On the flip side, at least.
Yeah, I think that's actually not a bad idea either for anyone who is involved in... if they want to reach the millennial market or Gen Zers, obviously, that's a great way to do it.
Well, if you don't mind, I want to go over, like, kind of the creative ways that they did this advertisement, because it was just more than throwing their logo on the screen. Right. State Farm was one of their sponsors, and that's all they did. But for example, MasterCard, they created these wristbands that say MasterCard Nexus, and the fans are able to collect points and then exchange those points for League of Legends in-game currency. So, like, that's kind of interesting. Alienware had, like, 1v1 tournaments on the exact computers that the pros play on. Secret Lab chairs, they had a photo opportunity with the tournament trophy, so that's like a social media photo op.
No, I think that they did a great job with that, and especially what's interesting about MasterCard, it's funny how they're trying to penetrate the market, because, you know, it's either Venmo or PayPal that younger people use. Mm-hmm. Why would they use MasterCard? It's like so outdated. But it's still amazing to me that it and good to see that they're trying to stay relevant. And I applaud them. I think it was a great idea. I mean, what was the viewership for that tournament?
It said day two already broke the 2 million mark in this little thumbnail, and then I couldn't find the exact number in the article.
Well, that's a good number there. I mean, it definitely speaks enormous volumes, bigger than the Overwatch, which I think only had 350,000 viewers.
Well, the 2018 Worlds had 100 million viewers. So, right. I'm assuming that 2019 had more.
Okay, so maybe it did. But then again, is it, what are the...
Yeah, it says it should be. There's an article from 7 days ago that says it should be well over 100 million viewers, so I don't know.
Wow. Okay, well, that's
I don't know, it's great. A lot. It's the most popular game probably in esports.
Right. But, you know, I was going to just mention something. It's a nice connection for... I mean, I think it's a great opportunity for Riot and for League of Legends and the esports and stuff like that.
But well, Riot's so good at advertisement in general. Like, they put out music videos, even Axe, the body spray company. They had a booth with 3D digital scanners so you could put yourself into the Rift.
Just, that's so cool.
They're totally out of the box, and especially this year, they've been really coming out with some interesting things.
Well, you know, it's funny because if you look at Riot, then you look at what's going on at Blizzard.
Well, everybody made the joke that for Riot's anniversary, they came out with all this awesome game content, and then Blizzard had its whole scandal, and BlizzCon was okay, but I think it disappointed people.
It was a major disappointment. In fact, I think that their Call of Duty thing, their activation is just not happening.
Mm.
You know, I mean, they were like supposed to be building a league for it, and it's just kind of falling on its ass. But I think there's a lot of they have a lot of problems going on there that have to be rectified at some point.
The president put out a statement saying it was the hardest year that he's worked at Blizzard.
Yeah, I think that they had a $4 million loss. No, it was more than that. It was $1 billion loss or something like that this past year. But I know that they lost a lot of money. So they're not, you know, they weren't really turning it around. It's funny how, like, you know, you hear a lot about Blizzard. You hear a lot about the Overwatch. You hear a lot about Call of Duty and what they're working on, and, you know, Heroes of the Storm and all their games that they're trying to put out.
I feel like I never hear about Heroes of the Storm.
Yeah, I never do either, but people sometimes talk about it. Yeah. Well, actually, they don't have a very big following, let's put it that way.
No, they do not, and they never did.
But that speaks volumes about Blizzard, you know, like... If they put out a game like Heroes of the Storm, what happens to it? You know, it's just nobody even knows about it. But, you know, it's also just it's an analysis of the entire spectrum of the business itself. It's just poor management, I think, and very poor leadership, and not being able to think out of the box. And I think that's a problem, I think, that is going to be the demise of Blizzard. Now, someone's going to come in and sweep in and buy it, and probably be able to turn it around. Could be Take-Two, maybe, because Take-Two is anything they touch turns to gold.
Mm.
But they're very careful about what they do get involved in. But you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they do get involved in it. But there's been, and then, you know, the Allied Esports also had an enormous loss. I think it was close to $4 million.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Allied Esports had came in at the end of the year. With big losses. So there's a lot of these sort of like sad stories in regard to esports, but there's also a lot of, like, you know, sort of seeing the bigger picture. and working on what the future holds. And the future's bright, but there's still, like, I think the weaker parts will fall off.
Yeah, it's so new. Everything that's going to fail is going to fail soon.
Right, and then it'll just get back on track.
Yeah,
there'll be other things that come. But anyway, that's pretty much what happened in the news the last 2 weeks. It hasn't been that exciting, but
we did
cover a lot of the local stuff that did go on. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a more. I'm really looking forward to see what 2020 brings. But it's definitely an exciting time to be part of this. And I think the future is bright for esports as a whole, as I've always said. But you know, there's always the ones that, you know, make the attempt but don't make it, and that's what happens. They have to sort of get either bought into other places that are more successful, and everything sort of just has its way of settling and building on that. So hopefully we'll see what more things, you know, happen in the next 2 weeks when we talk again.
All right, that's our time. Thank you so much, Ari. Great conversation as always.
Yeah, thank you, Jen.
Right, have a good night.